I don't know. Duck and cover, bitches.
La, 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 la. Hello!
Hello, everybody.
And I'll do the Midwestern hello, which is howdy.
Oh, yeah.
Do y'all hear that? What is that, Brett? Is that a third voice?
Oh, my God. That sounds like another. What is it? What's that word?
What's that word? An angel from above?
An angel? Another. Is it embodied spirit? Mm. It's
Do I have a ghost in the house?
Definitely a spirit. Don't we have three right now?
Three spirits.
Wait a minute. I got two spirits by myself.
I have one spirit here. So if you haven't noticed yet, we do not have a ghost on this podcast, but we do have a third host with us today. So Michelle, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. I am Michelle. Some people know me as MJ. Some people know me as Moofstress. If you're in the computer gaming realm of things, people know me that way too. But I am the host of the Cornfield Meat Transportation Disasters. We originally started as a railroad transportation disaster podcast, but then we expanded to all transportation disasters. So now we do them all, but we still do two railroad disasters a month. So we do one every other.
Great.
Switch it up.
Amazing.
I'm sure maybe some of our good old longtime listeners, all three of them, have heard the special where we had the Cornfield Me special episode where you did research and you handed it over to us. And we just
so
like,
grateful.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Every time we're like, thank you so much. I had a break. It was amazing.
I even have more to give you guys. So
wonderful. We are just effusing your praises. We're just like, oh my gosh, this is so incredible. It was such well-organized research that to this day, I actually still am trying to attain that level. I haven't gotten there yet, but I'm still trying.
I noticed that at the top of the show, I hear you guys do, you know, at the top of your segments, you do the, you know, the sources, which is awesome. And I actually started doing that because of, have you guys ever listened to Rachel and David, All Bad Things?
I only have a couple times. It's on my list of things to listen to this.
They're hilarious.
They're awesome. I've listened.
They are very funny. And they were actually, the way that I got involved in podcasting is I was like, you know, I really want to give them a couple of things to get them to do one of my episodes. And sure enough, they were thrilled because I sent three of them at the same time. Yay. And they actually did the PepCon explosion episode. But they did this episode for me when I submitted these.
Oh, yeah.
Two
of them. Amazing. All Bad Things.
So they did this episode for me, which was really cool. And when they did that, I kind of got the podcast bug. And I was like, can I do this myself?
So, oh my gosh. So you've heard little pieces of what we're talking about. If you want to listen to more, which I know you do, we will have a bonus episode, you know, coming out when Brina has time to edit it. Cause you know how she works. It's like every weekend we have an episode and sometimes Monday because I'm great with time management. So we will have more of this intro that comes into this full on conversation. So you can feel like you're not alone in your room eating cereal in the dark. Please put on pants.
Bonus.
So
bonus
who's
boner.
Gonna go first?
Do you want to? I think that's actually one of AJ's band names. Do you want to
rock scissors?
Rock paper scissors.
Yeah.
Okay. Ready? So. Ready? Okay. Wait. Who's okay?
We all doing it?
Yeah. Sure. We're trying to.
Ready?
Okay.
Okay.
One, two, three.
It's always hung up.
It's on three.
It's on three, right?
No. I've always done 1, 2, 3. Throw.
Okay. 1, 2, 3.
Okay.
Shoot.
1, 2, 3. Throw.
1, 2, 3.
Okay.
Shoot. Okay.
Ready?
One, two.
It's like slow mo.
Three.
Shoot. Oh, okay. Brett won. Me and Michelle both did paper. I almost did rock, but
I almost did rock.
All right. Okay.
All right. Get it, girl.
Okay, great. Okay. Cool. I would. would say like ready drum roll please, but there's no drum roll necessary. Just pound the boobs, pound the boobs. So I was going to do, as I mentioned before, when we were kind of chatting earlier, that I was going to do the Gates of Hell. And I was like, okay, it's kind of short, but it could allude to other disasters and it could kind of go over like coal seams and how they happen and why they continue to burn and so on and so on. So that's going to be for another time when I have like a lot more time to research and come down my fun little rabbit hole. Didn't have time this week. I'm doing double on double and double. So, I decided, since we're still in winter, and that we have storms hitting the East Coast right now, that I would go over another blizzard. So I decided to do the blizzard of 1913 in Colorado.
Oh, and, okay.
I don't know if you guys know, but it is to this day. I don't know nothing.
That's why you're here for me, to tell me
why
all
I'm here.
About it.
I'm here to tell you about it. It's to this day stands to be the biggest blizzard, the worst blizzard on record in Colorado history.
Yeah. 2012. Wow.
Well, 2003 was another big one.
Yeah. I was going to say, 1912 and 1913 were really, really bad.
Really tumultuous years.
Oh, weather related. I don't know if you guys ever heard of, and I believe this was 1912, Ohio experienced its worst disaster ever. And it was basically the entire state flooded.
Oh.
The entire state flooded.
Holy
dang.
Shit. Yeah. I mean, it was not good.
All right. That's going on the list.
Yeah. Who gets it? Rochambeau, go. Go.
Yeah. Definitely check that one out. It actually,
as I mentioned also before, as we were chatting earlier, that I said, you know, have you ever gone through and like been like, oh my God, I didn't know this about this storm and so on, and like all the links. They have these sort of like spindly little fingers that go out and you're like, oh, there's this one, this one, this one. In this particular year, there was also a huge, and I put it on my list already, so for you can't take it. I put it on my Trello today. White Hurricane, the White Hurricane of 1914.
The Great Lakes one?
Yeah.
So there were two.
Okay. because Ohio is close to the Great Lakes, right?
Yeah.
The bottom of it.
So there were two. There was one, and I believe this was the early 1900s, and then there was one in 1978. They were both called the White Hurricane.
Yep.
One of them was called the White Hurricane. The other one was called the Great White Hurricane.
Yeah, this was just the White Hurricane, November 1913. And I was like, oh my God, is it the same storm? It's not, because this actually happened before the one that I'm going to talk about, which theoretically, remember how I told, so we had one of these already happen on our podcast where Bree talked about the Tacoma Bridge.
Narrow's Bridge. Oh yeah. Narrow's
Bridge.
And then the next week.
And then the next week I talked about the blizzard, and that was the same one. It was actually a few days later and it had moved across the United States. So in weather patterns.
Yeah.
But what's really
blew the Tacoma Narrow's Bridge.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so fucking crazy.
Yeah, what's really funny about this is I was researching the White Hurricane of 78, and I have that. I have, like, my script is about half written, but I have all the audio that I want to throw in it because I found a whole bunch of news articles.
Oh, I'm sure.
News reports and stuff about it, even one from Cleveland where they were talking about it. So
nice.
Oh, dang. Yeah.
So we'll start off, as we usually do, with my sources. So my sources, blogs.denverpost.com, with lots of other stuff behind it, but yeah, whatever. I'm just going to go straight there. Onlyinyourstate.com, of course, the NOAA and National Weather Service. The National Weather Service actually is where I got a PDF that was provided by Jessica R. Smith, a Hollings student. So at the time she was a student, I guess I'm assuming working for the National Weather Service. And it was presented by weather.gov. So, and the denverchannel.com. All right. So shall we begin? I don't think that we ever did this in the past. When we discussed blizzards, we talked about storms and this, that, and the other. And like, yeah, we do throw some definitions in there every now and again, but I wanted to actually go look up the blizzard definition. So in the US, the National Weather Service defines a blizzard as a severe snowstorm characterized by strong winds causing blowing snow that results in low visibility. So I actually didn't know that. I just assumed a blizzard was a lot of fucking snow. Like that was my definition. That's a lot of fucking snow.
Yeah, and the wind has to be above sustained 35 miles an hour, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. Yes. So right. 35. Yes, you are.
Damn,
girl. So it does have to be equal to or above 35 miles per hour blowing or drifting snow, which hence reduces visibility. So, so they say the difference between a blizzard and a snowstorm is the strength of the wind. So if you're in a snowstorm, Yeah. It's kind of blowing a little bit and there's a lot of snow basically, but there's a lot of snow and there's really crazy wind. So
is there a specific definition for snowstorm or is it just like when it's snowing or is that there's so many inches?
There is a specific,
hour, right?
I think this one is more, so it's the accumulating amount, what's been accumulating. And then like, if it consists of frozen water or is it actual snowflakes.
Just like with winter weather advisories, there's so much, there's like an actual definition to that. And then when you start hitting the winter weather storm warnings and stuff then it's getting further beyond.
Which makes sense with like the FEMA app when you get the notifications and stuff.
That makes a lot
more sense.
One of the things too, and I don't know if you guys have mentioned this before, a lot of people, and they're trying to figure out how to fix this. They've been trying to figure out how to fix it for years, to be honest with you. But a lot of people don't know the difference between a watch and a warning when it comes to severe weathers, you know, severe
correct.
Weather
there's
of
a
any
huge,
sort.
There's a difference,
big difference
for sure.
There's
one
a big
is like,
difference.
Be prepared to run, and one is fucking run, essentially. Like, that's how I think
you
of
got it.
Run.
Yeah.
Maybe they should just change it to that, you know, be prepared to run and fucking run.
Fucking run.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Yes. Because, you know, people look at it and they're like, well, what's the difference between the two? And I can't figure out which one it is. You know, that's what a lot of people think. I've known for a very long time, just because of my background in, you know, severe weather and all the training that I've done. But for the people that don't know, a watch is just watch, you know, just think about it. If you
wait
think about it, just wait and see. Yeah. That's
see
what a watch
be,
is.
Wait and see and be prepared.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
the big
exactly.
thing. Be prepared. So.
Yes. Yeah. Now, when you hear warning, it's like if a parent is giving you that look and you know that look is a warning to behave,
well,
or they're going to
smack your ass
or your ass is in big trouble. that is exactly what the difference is, you know?
Yeah. So now we know what a blizzard is, right? Okay.
Yes.
So it has to be above 35 mile per hour winds. A lot of snow, so a severe or a heavily accumulating snow. And then it also is supposed to last for a prolonged period of time, so typically 3 hours or more, okay?
Okay.
So, blizzard versus snowstorm. And then I took a look at the top storms that happen in Denver, because it's Denver. It fucking snows there all the time, and they get snowstorms all the time. So it's like, really, is this really like a big thing? So, yes, it is. Top storms in Denver. Number one is the one I'm actually doing today, which is the 1913 blizzard, okay, of Denver, Colorado. I did in the research, almost all of them say December 1st through 5th, almost all of them. But I have a couple of resources that said that was from, like, that's the snow started on the 3rd, some say it started on the 4th. So that time, you know, back in that day, records aren't always the most accurate. So it is anywhere between the 1st and the 7th. So,
okay, fair enough.
And in Denver, just in Denver, not all the surrounding areas, because you know that those got more, 54.7 inches.
Whoa. That's so, almost as tall as I am.
Yep.
Oh my God.
Yep. 54.7.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm 61 inches tall.
So
I wouldn't live in that. It would be like, to my barely.
How do you get out of your house?
How do you get out of your house?
Oh, you don't. Unless I go through like my second story window, maybe.
Right, just pop out. But then it's like then you look like the cat from the YouTube video that they just threw out and just went
pop pop pop
just into the snow.
I was thinking of the GIF of the dog like hopping through the snow.
Oh my God!
I had a friend from Massachusetts. I actually had a friend from Massachusetts literally do that out his second floor window.
Whoa.
He just went right out of the second floor window, went poof, right into the snow, disappeared.
He's like, F this, I'm trying. I'm going.
That scares
going
me a little.
It.
literally disappear and I have to find a way to swim up.
Yeah, you'd have to just kind of like just do this and like push the snow to the side to try and, I don't know. I would never
or be like the dogs that disappear where they try to jump over.
Right? Yeah.
Like just I think of like Mario Brothers, like Super Mario Brothers.
So this is horrible. We're getting so off track. I love it.
I'm going to keep drinking.
It's the best.
Go on.
Number two worst storm in Denver was the 2003 March 17th. And I think that I feel like at some point when we were chatting earlier, MJ, that you kind of were like, oh my God, you know, all the blizzards that occurred in Denver, you know, yeah, March 2003 was a big one. Yeah. And that happened St. Patrick's Day through the 19th. So 3 days, again, we're going more longer than 3 hours. So 3 days, that was 31.8 inches. So again, quite a lot. You're talking about thigh, hip level, depending on how tall you are. And I did number three. The rest of them kind of dwindled down to like in the mid 20s. And I was like, yeah, that's a lot, but it's not like crazy. So, and they're notable, but not as notable as these. And the last one was number three, 1946, November 2nd through the 4th. It was 30.4 inches. Now, out of the top 10 storms in Denver, only two of them occurred in spring. The rest of them occurred like in winter, which winter qualifies from like October, November, December, January, kind of like that time, you know?
Okay.
I forget the place of snow in spring because, okay.
Okay, so as we mentioned before, we were talking about how like 1912 and 1913 were actually pretty stellar years for disasters, at least natural disasters, for weather, cold, floods, et cetera. It was just a nutty year, or nutty 2 years. So that year in 1913, specifically, winter started a bit early for Denver. They had the first snow on September 11th. So that's pretty early for Denver standards. Okay. Overall, though, even though they had some snowfall in early September and they did have some stuff in October, they did say that overall it was actually a pretty dry winter. So they were actually growing pretty concerned. They're like, you know, there's not a lot of moisture. How's the farming going to be next year? So they were a little bit worried. The storm took care of that.
Oh yeah,
by and large. Snow began to fall, according to most. Again, not all, but most of my sources say snow began to fall on December 1st and didn't stop until the 5th. So we're talking anywhere. So according to the, like I said, according to this, they vary between the 5th and the 6th. But about 4 days of straight snowfall, just going and going and going.
Wow.
A lot of people were happy to see it. Again, because there wasn't a lot early in the year.
In the beginning.
Yeah. So they were like, all right, we're getting our big snowfall. This is great. You know, thinking, you know, got a couple feet of snow. Good. This is a great start to winter. But after the third day, residents are like, okay, this is concerning. It's not stopping. It's really fucking windy. We're getting crazy snow drifts. They talked about snow drifts being anywhere between 20 and 30 feet high.
As mentioned, there's no apocalypse parties. They're just way too drunk and hungover.
Well, you know, it's one thing. So I did mention that there was a couple of really, I don't know, I think I actually copied it because I was like, meh, those are okay. So they talked about like some of the headlines saying that, you know, that we're going to wait until schools close until safety reigns, I think is what they said. And then, and they talked about people having jollies, like being excited that, you know, hey, look, all the snow's here, you know.
Oh, jollies, of course.
Jollies.
They're so gay so and jolly. Happy.
So they, you know, but the problem was that coal was the primary source of heat and energy then. And it was cold, but it was like, and I'm sure by Colorado standards, like 32 is not cold. You know, they're probably like, it's chilly, you know. But back then, you know, you didn't have the kind of homes that you do today and so on. So, and coal being the only heat source, they were like, it's cold. We need to burn coal. So I think after like 2 days, they were like, hey, you know, be careful, watch your supplies, guard your supplies because it's getting bad. Like it's not stopping. So they advised people to just be super careful about how much they burn
and ration it and hide it.
Because they're like, people are going to steal it.
People jacking your shit.
People jacking your shit all the time. So it's becoming scarce. And the worst part, There's no way to get more because it's snowing everywhere.
I was going to say there's no way to get it in because people probably can't do transportation. Like you can't rail it in.
So railways are now becoming dysfunctional. Now we're talking about communication lines are down. So there's just no way for anybody to get anything. So
that's scary.
It is very scary. Newspapers did predict snow. And I actually saw like a little clipping of one and it was hilarious. It was like snow Thursday, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh my God, it's so cute. And it's like, there's your weather report. It's in your paper in the morning. Like it's going to be raining tomorrow, you know? And it's like, how much stock could you take in that at that time? Because you didn't know that much. You were just kind of like just going on faith. Like, yeah, it's a weatherman. He knows.
Yeah.
Just like we did today.
Yeah. I was about to say, like, the little snowstorm that we had in Portland, it was like, they, with all the technology we had, they only
know 2 to 4 inches.
They only know so much.
Right.
They can't predict. They're not fucking God.
They're not.
Like, they're men and women that are, like, super smart and non-binary people. They're super fucking smart, but, like, they can't predict everything.
Yeah, they can't predict
You could
everything.
Be a weather person, Ree, because if you know math, that's all that weather is.
Yep.
It's all math.
Ugh. Yeah.
But that meteorology shit, like, oh my gosh, it's fucking intense.
I do. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. I think of it like the same way that I think of like astrophysics and stuff too. Like there's a lot into it and there's a lot of variables and there's just, it's a lot of variable constants and you know, all those mathy terms.
Spaghetti models.
I sound like a math person yet. Anyways.
Damn spaghetti models.
All right. Well, and then when you start getting into the fake numbers, it's like, wait, what?
Oh, the imaginary numbers?
No. Yeah, imaginary numbers.
Or the complex number graph.
So there was no atmospheric maps at the time. So they were relying on these like crazy little like lower atmosphere land maps. And it's like, they just didn't have the data. So the Denver Post, which was they were never like, you know, accused of an understatement, according to this particular article. They published a souvenir edition of the day. Of the big storm. And they had headlines that said, no trains, no schools, no taxis, no mails, no noises, no deliveries, no funerals, nothing but snow, snow,
no
snow,
noises.
Snow.
That's
snow, snow, still snow. Falling. And yeah,
it
no noises.
Like a,
no noises.
It sounds like a car salesman.
Right?
No, snow, snow.
But it's just like, it's so funny because like they legitimately had nothing. No trains, no schools, no taxis. No, like literally nothing was happening. Everything was,
it was like a ghost
standstill.
Town.
Stand sales. You couldn't do anything.
So who got the newspapers? How did that even happen? Did they just I feel like they just held the newspapers till it was done.
It gets better. I love this.
Oh, okay.
So just
please
wait.
Go on.
Okay. So I have more newspaper stuff, but as I'm going to continue on some more facts here. So, okay. Unusual for December in Colorado, temps in the low 30s and upper 20s. So I guess usually they're a little bit chillier than that. So they should be in the 20s and teens. Okay. So most people are used to cooler snow or cooler winter. And then when they have snow, it's sort of the light, fluffy stuff, okay?
I was about to say, so this is like heavy snow.
Right. So what's happening is it's allowing for wet, heavy snow. And then on top of that, there was a pressure pattern that opened the Gulf that allowed more moisture to travel east of Colorado. So it just was like a cacophony of like, hey, look, not only do we have warmer temperatures, but now here's all this moisture, but it's just enough to make it freeze. So now you just have like slush, you know, not slush, but like heavy snow.
Heavy snow.
Yeah.
Heavy snow. So the snowfall totals for the blizzard on all the larger areas, Georgetown, which was outside of, I think it was outside of Boulder, not Denver. So it's like a little ways out, but 86 inches.
Whoa.
86 inches. Huh. Above my head.
I don't know what that noise was, but huh.
Well, you got to remember too, that because this is heavy snow, you have a couple things you got to worry about. One of the biggest things is the collapsing of roofs with that amount of snow.
And I'll get to that. I'll get to that. Actually.
Oh, so, yeah.
I got a little sneaky sneak
here. I'm just like covering my mouth right now in like,
I thought you were
fuck.
Froze. Yeah. I thought your video was froze.
No.
Internet friends
used to this. Brett's used to the fuck.
Yes, I am used to that. Okay, so 86 inches. Hell, what the hell?
Yeah,
like that's a lot. I mean, I want to. I don't think that's the most on record ever, but I do think it's. I mean, I already know it's the most on record for Colorado. So
yeah,
Estes Park. I actually have a friend that lives there. 53. Denver, which I mentioned was 45.7. Boulder was 43.75 and Fort Collins 33.5. So Fort Collins is north of Colorado or north of Denver. Colorado Springs had about almost 24.5.
So is this a lot of snow no matter what, where you were in the general
everywhere,
area though?
Like, everywhere. It was just a lot of snow just in that area, just all over that area of Denver or area of Colorado. It was the largest amount of snowfall from a single storm in Denver, according to the records obtained from the National Weather Service. So any storm ever that has occurred, and we've had a lot of doozies, even the last couple of years with the bomb cyclones, this one's been the worst. This one has been the worst. I didn't find any data that said that this could be attributed to an actual bomb cyclone.
They didn't even use that term back then.
Yeah. They didn't have that term back then. So I know that there's been a couple of things that Bree and I have researched before where I'm like, they have looked back and been like, yep, given the weather patterns, this was definitely a bomb cyclone. But
not even in the '70s did they use that term.
Yeah. So I don't know that they could classify this, even if they went back and looked at all the weather data they had to determine that that's what it would be.
Do you know what the barometer readings were?
I didn't find those. No.
Cause that's what normally signifies a bomb cyclone is when the barometer just drops.
It just tanks.
Plummets.
Yeah.
It's like a hurricane. Like when a hurricane happens.
Yep. And I don't know that this was, that this had that in play. They did mention that the pressure was unusual, but they didn't say whether or not it was low, high, you know,
I mean, just the fact that it's feeding all that, if it's pulling from the Gulf and pulling all that moisture up.
Makes you think. Yeah.
Yeah.
So many roofs did collapse, ladies and gentlemen, due to heavy snow, especially if it was flat roofed. So a lot of people lost their roofs that year, and including a lot of corporate and historical buildings. Thursday, December 4th, all 200 plus miles of Denver's streetcar service was halted. it took a week to uncover most tracks. And the problem was, because they'd uncover one set of tracks and then the other one would have snowfall. So like, they'd be trying to push all this stuff to the side. And I'll get to that too. So, for every track they uncovered, another one would get covered. So they had a lot of problems trying to keeping everything clean. Okay.
That makes sense though. Yeah. With how fast.
You just don't know where the hell to push all the damn snow.
I literally wrote, check this out. When it all stopped, they had to begin the process of digging out. Okay. Problem was, where do they put it? Because there's so much fucking snow everywhere. Where are they going to put more snow?
Snow cones for everyone.
So they would fill wagons that were drawn by horse and by mule. They would pack them full of snow and they'd send them off to any open space they could find. So if you imagine like there was a school and there was a field in front of the school. Guess what happened to the field? It became a mountain of fucking snow.
But how great is that for the kids and stuff? Like imagine having that much snow. It'd be so much fun to play in.
They turned 8th Avenue into a sled area.
Yes.
I think it was 8th Avenue or 12th. It might've been 12th, but they had a particular avenue that was downtown that they turned into a sled row, basically. Pretty stoked on that. I was like, yes, kids rule the day. And then, of course, remember how I mentioned the other places outside of Denver, like Estes Park and Georgetown, they all had way more snow. What are they going to do with it? It took them weeks to get piles to the point or like basically. So there is a couple shots and I'll post it on social media when we go live with this episode. But there are shots of people walking through the neighborhoods and it's like walking through areas of like Bend, Oregon, or like, you know, like those areas where there's ski towns and they have the roads plowed and it's like a tunnel.
Tunnels.
It's a straight tunnel.
Yep.
It's amazing to see. And you're just like,
and you got to think they didn't have the stuff to be able to clear roads like we do today. So this shit was done by hand.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
No, they did. There was a machine that was mentioned that they did try to use. And it was kind of like, if you imagine like a steam engine with a large like fan blade on it.
That is, are you sure? I know that's a railroad.
Yeah.
Railroad used to have those.
But I feel like there was a section in Colorado that mentioned they tried to use something like that in like one of the mountain towns to clear out railway. But I have to go back and reread that because I can't. I think it was something that they said they thought about using but didn't do it. But the okay, so one of the pictures that I have was the Civic Center in the background, and I'll be posting that in there. You can see a bunch of wagons filled with snow and a bunch of horses and mules, and they're all just kind of like ready to go because they're going to the Civic Center. The Civic Center had a park in front, which of course is an open space. And they said it was stacked so deep that the snow didn't melt until July.
Oh, shit.
Fucking July. And this was in December, the first week of December, mind you. So the first week of December. So you're talking 8 months that snow is on this lawn in front of the Civic Center. Kids were just sledding in June, you know, let's go out to Civic Center. They still got snow, you know? So, yeah. So Georgetown, of course, hit the hardest with a staggering 7 feet, 4 inches of new snow. The Georgetown newspaper. Okay. Remember I told you I get into newspapers. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, okay, how are we reporting this shit? Like, or how they even get to work? Right? Probably stuck there. The Georgetown newspaper cut off from all news with the trains blocked and the telegraph services inoperable, printed only 4 pages on December 6th. Pages 2 and 3 were left completely blank and white, wow. Like the all encompassing snow. It's like a jab, you know, like, fuck you. We're going to write a
this
newspaper.
This is our life now.
And we're just going to make it snow.
There is no news. This, you are living the news.
This is your life. Here's the front page where all the headlines are because that's all we could get from our neighbors. And on the inside is fucking snow.
Oh my gosh.
That's funny.
I thought that was hilarious. I was like, oh God, I've got to include this. They said it was weeks before transportation could be open for them. Again, you know,
wow,
a lot of snow they had to get out of there. So
can I just say that I'm kind of sad that they weren't like, Daryl hasn't changed his underwear in 3 days. It feels like shit inside the newsroom.
I said,
Susie has started her affair with Joseph in the corner of the.
I didn't get a copy of it. And I want to see if there's a way for us to get a copy of this Georgetown newspaper that was only 6 pages and 4 pages. And
do you know what the date was?
It's a December 6th. And so pages 2 and 3 left blank. So if 2 and 3 were left blank and it's 6 pages, then what were the other 4 pages? What was on there?
Yeah.
Was it local? Was it like Helen lost 6 chickens because they all froze in the fence last night? Or yeah. We can't find our cows because our pasture is like buried head deep in snow. And, you know.
Has someone seen George? He left to get us some food, but we haven't seen him for 2 days. Does anyone know where George is?
Does anyone know where George is?
They did reporter.
Actually, so the Denver Journal did uncover one dead body. I think it was 3 days after the storm. So I was like, oh. So there was one death at least.
Yeah. I just mentioned George went to get like more coffee, like the intern, and never went back.
Right. What happened to George? Somebody drew him out. So the Daily Journal in Colorado, which is another newspaper, on December 10th had a story that said millionaires mingle with laborers. The cool thing was this actually brought everybody together. Everybody was in the same turmoil. Regardless of the fact that even though, you know, millionaires probably had a lot of money and had a lot of coal so they could stay warm, whereas the laborers mm-hmm. and the lower class did not, all of them equally wanted to get out of this so the city could get back to normal, so that laborers could go back to work, so that millionaires could go back to traveling and getting their communications and making their money however they do. Mm-hmm. And so all of them wanted to get out of this. So all of them were on the street, pulling their weight and making sure that they could get the snow out of the way so the city can continue to work. So it was actually kind of nice. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool that they all kind of chipped in. Didn't matter what class you were all going to work to get out of there. So I was like, all right, well done. The upside to this was that the snowstorm created enough moisture to create what they called the golden harvest the next year. So the year of 1914 was some of the most profitable for the farming industry.
Thank God.
On record. So I was like, all right, awesome.
Good for those farmers.
So it did have an upside. And the other upside was the building codes. They did change the building codes. So what they wound up doing is they would measure out and weigh what 1 square foot of snow of that particular type of snow would weigh. And the average was 23 pounds. So they changed the building code to say that roofs had to have, or had to be able to hold 25 to 30 pounds per square foot. So that is something that's still in force today. So
thank God.
Right. So yeah, so that's the blizzard of 1913. Short and sweet.
Well, here you go. Here's a fun little fact about snowfall.
Yeah.
Is snowfall on average, and I don't know if you guys know this, is 1 inch per every 10 inches of snowfall. So 1 inch of rainfall would equal 10 inches of snow.
I feel like we knew that.
Yeah. I think you and I discussed
about
that too.
One of our episodes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we were just like,
yeah. And that's not like the heavy snow, and that's not the really like fluffy snow. It's kind of like the in between.
Right. In between. So, yeah. Just a good old average.
All right. So I'm ready to do my
Do it because I want to see if I can figure it out.
Yeah. Okay. So the resources I used, Wikipedia,
yeah.
ib.frath, so it's FRATH,
okay.
.net,
okay.
lifescience.com, newspapers.com, USGS on YouTube, their channel on there, Michelle of the Cornfield Meat, yes, that's one of the sources. Do Go On the podcast, which is the second time I've used them.
Okay.
And I'm going not to finish this whole resource, Smithsonian channel on YouTube. I can give you a hint of, I've mentioned this, I feel like, numerous times in the last few episodes.
Oh, God.
This is going to be an explosive story.
That was a
big hint, but...
You're going to erupt in happiness.
Yeah, I know. It's a volcano. St. Helens!
Yes!
See, this is where we're from.
Channel.
This is where we're from.
On YouTube, footage of the 1980s Mount St. Helens eruption.
Amazing.
Yes.
One of my old patients experienced it. And she was telling me all about it, how like she walked out one morning, there was ash all over her car.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she lived in Portland at the time. So I was like, oh, holy my God.
That sounds right. Yeah. I'm so sorry ahead of time if I fucked this up, because I'm feeling really good with the alcohol. I'm really good, and I'm having a really good time. And
that means it's going to be perfect.
Oh, God. I'm going to hate editing myself is what it means.
No, it's going to be amazing.
I already know I'm going to hate what I wrote, too, because as I was writing, I'm like, I shook my head as I wrote it.
Oh, God.
I also didn't proof it, so let's see. So, Mount St. Helens is part of the Cascade Range in Skamania County in Washington, which is about 2 hours away from Portland. So it's up north and to the right, east-ish. As I say this and I point as if people can hear me, can see me. I do this every time. So it was named after Lord St. Helen, who was a British diplomat, and he was a friend of George Vancouver. I'm sure that name sounds familiar because Vancouver.
Yep.
And George Vancouver was an explorer that checked out the area in the 18th century.
Okay.
However, what I view as its original names, which I'm not going to say throughout because I will not be able to pronounce these throughout, but I want to give the credit to where credit is due.
I'll see if you can pronounce them, because I wouldn't be able to pronounce them.
Girl, I searched it up, so we'll see. So were the ones that were given by the indigenous people of the area.
Oh, I got this. Yeah, you can send them to me. I'll know it.
So the Cowless people called it La Wait Lata La. La Wait Lot La. Yes. And the Klickitat people called it Lutwit or Luwala Klo, which means smoke or fire mountain. I feel like I actually did okay.
Yeah.
You did okay.
I think you did just fine.
I tried to Google how to pronounce those, especially
the Luwala Klo and Lutwit. Lutwit isn't that the name of something up there?
I think
I feel like there's a beer that's named Lutwit, and probably then something, there's an area or whatnot named after.
Because it seems like there are indigenous people that were in the area. And the reason why I want to point it out is, as classic as I try to go, is like, well, yeah, Vancouver, like, was in there checking out the area. Yeah, Mr. Vancouver, you weren't the first people here. So chill the fuck out.
Yeah.
It's cool that you want to name this mountain after your buddy. Cool deal. But Indigenous people should get a shout out. Be like, hey, you named this mountain first.
Correct.
Way
people
first.
Should know.
Amen, sister.
Hey, get it. So hey. St. Helens was built up by numerous layers of lava, tempura or tempura, I guess.
Pumice, I thought you said tempura.
I did. Ignore it. But I meant to say tempura. Tempura.
I was like, tempura? Yes.
Tempura. T-E-P-H-R-A.
Tempura. Okay, tempura.
These layers of the lava and such were making it a composite or stratovolcano. So this was the same kind of volcano as Mount Vesuvius, which I've done earlier when I did Pompeii.
Mm-hmm. Oh, shit.
Do you know how many different types of volcanoes there are?
Four.
Three. Because there's...
Well, there's a fourth one that has yet to be found. Like
the strata, which is a composite, and then there's like two. There, I think there's like a more flat one.
That's like Hawaii's. Those are shield volcanoes.
Like the islands. Shield. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mind you, me and Michelle are making like finger shapes.
But that's why they called it a shield volcanoes, because it looks like a shield over on its
side.
What's
the third one?
Well, there's actually, depending on who you talk to.
Okay.
So you have cone volcanoes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The conic.
The cone volcanoes are, they're cinder volcanoes is what they are.
Yeah.
They're not very long lasting. They don't last a long time. They just kind of like spurt out their shit and then they're pretty much done.
It's a really bad day of food poisoning. Got it.
Yeah. You find a lot of like extinct ones through the areas of like New Mexico and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. In fact, I flew over a few of them when I was flying from Florida to Arizona, and I just happened to look down and I was like, what the hell am I looking at down there? And then I'm like, wait a minute, what am I looking at? So I realized those were, you know, cinder volcanoes that I was seeing. So you got those, and then you have the shield, and then the composite, and then the strato.
Strato, okay. Well, composite is strato, I think.
Well, composite is strato. When I said four, I said four because cinder cone and lava dome are not into the, there's a fine line which one's I said four because I knew about cinder cone, composite, shield, and then lava dome.
Okay.
That's where I got it from, but I don't know that it's correct, because like if you Google it, I think the first thing that comes up is three, which is composite, strato, shield, and dome. So
I'm not gonna lie, that same geology class I talk about every time, that's what I'm trying to refer to, and I'm trying to remember what I wrote in that notebook. So these types are known for switching explosive eruptions and effusive eruptions. So effusive eruptions are steady flows of lava. Mm-hmm. I know Brett has mentioned Pacific Ring of Fire. And how many times have you heard me sing it? Am I right? Well, Mount St. Helens and many other volcanoes within the area are in the Cascade Volcanic Arc.
Yes.
So they're also in the Pacific Ring of Fire is what I was trying to type.
Correct. Yep. They're part of that. It's really weird. They call it a ring of fire, but it's more like
it's not really a ring. It's
not
really
a ring. It's like a weird, odd-shaped dragon fruit lychee thing, because it's like, there's something that goes here and out there and over here and...
Yeah,
it's how we all realize they're like, if I just painted this ginormous swath, that's a ring. Mm-hmm. So they make
I was like, what's the joke that we can make about this? And I can't think of anything like a drunk circle drawing. I don't
would be a good one.
Yeah,
that's the closest.
That's a circle when I'm drawing.
I don't know. Okay, can you draw a circle right now, Brie?
She's like, right here. This is. It's like it's kind of like this.
Where were we? Oh yeah, so Pacific Ring of Fire.
Yep,
I've sang that song many times. We've all learned Bruna cannot sing. Well, Mount St. Helens and many of the other volcanoes who are also in the Cascade Volcanic Arc are as well. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, since 1800, the volcano has gone through various eruptions and different kinds.
Yes.
So life science notes that there were some eruptions that started in 1800 through 1857. So there was like some eruptions happened then. And then they had steam-driven eruptions that happened in 1903, 1921, and 1998. Overall, though, it's been pretty quiet volcano. So you had some steam eruptions. So you see some of that smoke coming out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like it says steam. Yeah.
Yep. And they're like, it's as if it's going to blow, and then nothing happened.
Exactly.
Yep.
The story starts on March 1st, 1980.
Oh,
University of Washington began to monitor earthquake activity around Mount St. Helens and General Cascade area.
Yep.
Later in March, they got a few rumbles. On the 23rd, they had a 4.0 magnitude earthquake.
Ooh.
Over the next few days, they continued and started to happen more often. At one point, having about three 4.0 magnitude earthquakes a fucking hour.
Oh, fuck that. Nope, I'm good.
Swarm.
That's called swarm run.
Three an hour.
Bye, no, Alicia.
Those are called swarm earthquakes. Yep.
Oh, God.
No.
Yep.
Yeah,
so
no.
Those of you who don't do a lot of math, that's about every 20 minutes.
Dude, if wow. I had an earthquake and then I had another one in 20 minutes, then another one in another 20 minutes, I'd be like, pack the yeah. fucking car. We're getting out
most
of here.
Of them, okay. Most of them you don't feel, though. Like, yeah. You know, unless you're on top of it, you wouldn't really feel them unless you start hitting into the, you know, the upper four and five plus. That's when you really start feeling them if you're in the area.
So Michelle hit my next sentence, which is now 4.0 magnitude earthquakes aren't huge, but you can feel them and they will shake a building.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I say that as after the earthquake that I was in, if it was a 4.0, which a lot of aftershocks are about 3 to 4.0. 3.0, if you're noticing, you'll see it. But there was one point when we had a 4.0 and I was outside and I could feel the ground moving. And when I was in the building, that's what would shake the buildings was a 4.0. It would shake and we'd all like brace to get ready to get under the tables.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I felt one when I was in Arizona in 2011.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was the one that hit in... Baja, California. It was a 7.0, I think.
Okay.
That hit out there. And so I was in Arizona and I felt it. And I was sitting next to my friend at work and I'm talking to her. And all of a sudden I felt almost like the best way I could describe it is if you feel like you're getting almost, you know, like when you get sick and sometimes you feel kind of
vertigo.
Unbalanced. Vertigo. You kind of get that weird feeling.
That happened to me. That happened to me in Vegas. Yeah, yeah, that happened to me in Vegas when we felt it, although there was a California earthquake that we felt all the way in Vegas. And I remember walking and delivering drinks. I was a cocktail waitress at the time. It's Texas Station. And I'm walking and I'm like, ugh.
You feel like
I
just
felt
odd.
Yeah. And then I get back and I step down my tray and everybody's like, just all a flutter. And I was like, what the fuck is everybody talking? And they're like, did you feel that? Did you feel a fucking earthquake? Look at the pit. And I turned around and I see in the pit, which is like where all the tables are, all the lights are swinging. And I was like, I just felt really sick for a second.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, you get that like weird vertigo.
Yeah, no.
Nope.
this is only March. So
this is the warm up.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. This is the 5 minute jump.
So
over,
it was
a lot harder than you think.
1985, right?
Is 1980.
Okay. 80.
So the story starts March 1st, 1980.
Okay.
And what, like University of Washington, it sounds like they got some new seismic monitoring equipment.
Okay.
And that's when they started monitoring and stuff.
Like, this is like a big thing with them. Yeah. All the electronic monitoring stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a huge
thing. They got
thing
real fancy.
Real stuff.
Yeah. In fact, uh-huh. Mount St. Helens was the most monitored earthquake in the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I never realized how big. So I always knew about Mount St. Helens. And then when I was in geology, I knew. But really reading about this and talking to Michelle, I just realized how big of a thing it was.
Yeah,
like just
huge.
The,
I mean, it's even more than like
the
Montserrat
magnitude of it.
or the Hawaiian volcanoes.
Pinatubo.
Yeah, all of them.
Any of those that happen.
Mm-hmm. So we got them earthquakes, those 4.0s. Hey. Yeah.
Hey.
So by March 27th, Mount St. Helens pops its top off. The blast created a 250-foot wide crater and pushed out steam up to 6,000 miles into the sky.
Fuck.
Yes, miles. Woo, 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 woo.
Yeah.
So
Wait a minute. Say that again.
Wait, 6,000 feet? Did I say miles?
7 miles.
Yeah, you said miles. Yeah.
That's
like,
why I was like, fuck. I was like, So well, I drove
miles, and as I said that, I was like, that's not miles.
It went through the atmosphere, touched Mercury,
it went
Mars,
through all of them.
All the planets around us.
Because I'm like, wait a minute. Mount St. Helens, when it erupted, only went 16 miles in the air. So, wait, what?
Again. The blast crater, a 250-foot wide crater that pushed out steam up to 6,000 feet into the sky.
Yes, there you go.
So these eruptions continued but slowed down over the next month until May. Starting May 7th, St. Helens power came back. The frequency of eruptions started to add up quickly. 10 days later, March 17th, quote, the north side of the volcano has bulged out about 450 feet nearly horizontally, indicating that magma was rising towards, different page, towards the summit of the volcano and pressure was building. So this is when the bulge comes through.
The bulge. So, you know a guy named that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. The hella bulge. Yeah. So there was already that like huge, like it was a 250 foot crater at the time that was in Mount St. Helens. And within that is this bulge. It's so fucking weird to see the pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you see the pictures,
it's creepy. Damn,
it is. Yeah. It's like scary knowing that it was moving magma. Like that. I was like, oh shit.
And you're like, something's about to happen. Something's about to happen.
Yeah. So this is called a cryptodome. Think of it as a volcano zit. That is the best way I could describe it.
That's the best way to describe
there
it.
There you go. Yeah.
Because it's like that pus under, and it's like one of those almost like cystic zits, but like it has a little head.
Oh.
So this volcano zit was growing up to 5 feet a day. And that was towards like the end of the May 7th area, like 5 foot a day. So it was growing a brina a day.
Yep. There you go.
So this guy, our good volcano zit, got a buddy, another crater.
Oh god.
And this crater has a blue flame coming out of it. And the combination of all of this happening, static electricity from the ash cloud sent out lightning bolts that were put to 2 miles long.
Oh my god.
2 mile long fucking lightning bolts out of this fucking crater in the how did people not freak out about this? I don't understand.
It's when you see the pictures of volcanic lightning, it looks
it's
fake.
Cool.
It looks fake.
It does look fake.
Shit.
It does look fake, but it looks cool.
It is. It is very cool. But you're like, nah, that's CGI.
What I think even is that bulge when you're watching that bulge, because I feel like I've seen pictures of like they have picture of that bulge growing and watching it, you see it grow.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And you know that's magma, and people still were like, we're fine.
We're
and
okay.
That's not only
it's
magma.
Gonna explode. It might just throw a couple of rocks here and there, but we'll be good.
Yeah,
and that's not only magma though, but you gotta remember that's magma underneath rock.
Yes.
So that is literally the magma pushing the rock.
Yes.
So that it can make room for itself.
Yeah.
And so it's pushing it out too, like almost horizontal to where the bulge, like it's almost like leaning over the mountain. Mm. You know, like if that makes sense. Like you have where the mountain's going up and this bulge is bulging over that steep.
Yeah, and you gotta remember that Mount St. Helens is very conical. Very conical. Conical?
Yeah.
Conical?
Yeah.
Conical? Yeah, we gotcha.
Comical and conical.
Comical, if you will.
Yes. They almost called it the perfect volcano because of the shape it was.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't the beginning though, but even by the first, like, yeah.
Exactly. But when that bulge started happening, it caused a deformation to this perfect cone.
Well, I was about to say before the deformation, you had that 250 crater that came out because before the.
And that actually came through the glacier. That was coming up through the glacier.
Yeah. And so like first you had like a kind of a chunk that was like, oh, now you have a crater. But then you had that. And that bulge, it's funny that I say like a volcanic zit. But if you look at the pictures, it looks like St. Helen has a fucking zit. Like it looks like you could squeeze it and it's going to out.
And ironically, she's the youngest volcano in the entire Cascade Mountain Range.
Oh, really? I did not know that. It's funny because I kept wanting to call it a she, but I didn't because it's technically named after a man. But St. Helens to me just sounds like a woman.
Everybody says she.
Okay, so here we go to my dramatic voice.
Okay.
Sunday, May 18th, 1832 a.m. USGS
Volcanologist.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
The USGS volcanologist David Johnston calls over the radio. Vancouver, this is it. Unfortunately for David, these were his last words.
Oh.
A 5.1 magnitude earthquake right below that bulge shook the mountain. Out came a burst from the side down of that bulge. Magma spewed horizontally, breaking off part of the mountain summit, and a landslide happened. This was superheated gas and rock debris cloud that glowed, like it fucking glowed, that moved at a supersonic speed. So, if that didn't make sense to anyone. I feel like that makes sense. The shockwave continued on for 20 more miles, but it wasn't done yet. Next, there was an eruption that climbed the sky and created that classic mushroom cloud. This pushed out 540 million tons of ash. This ash would travel around the globe for the next 2 weeks. The pyroclastic flow, which is a fast-moving current of hot gas and volcanic matter, pushed down the trees along its way. Of course, with eruptions, you have heat. So now there were volcanic mud flows also oozing out of St. Helens, some at the speed of 90 miles per hour. Some of the mud flow covered, Toot Valley?
Tuttle.
So some of this mud flow.
Tuttle, is that right?
Tuttle?
Yeah, we'll go with that.
All right, cool. I'll try this again to see.
And by the way, the mud flows, those are actually called lahars.
Oh, lahars are the lahars. Fancy. I saw those, that, like, lahars.
Lahars are mud flows.
It's like the melting.
See, what happened was when Mount St. Helens erupted,
uh-huh.
there were, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, three glaciers on the mountain. They flash melted.
Yeah, wow. Like quickly.
They just gone.
Because the heat quickly. Was so intense.
Yeah, when it erupted. So what that caused was, of course, you just had this rush of water now coming down the mountain. And it all went to the north side mm-hmm. because it was northwest eruption?
It just said north, everything I read. It was just like north, it's pushing out. Wow. Yeah, it was probably closer to northwest because
I think it was a north northwest. Was. Yeah, I think that's where that it went north northwest because that's where David Johnston was. Also, he was located over that way. But when it released those glaciers, I mean, you're talking freaking glaciers,
yeah.
You know, and all of that water suddenly rushes into all the creeks and streams and rivers that are coming down the mountain, and it became a rolling just water debris of all sorts, boulders, anything you could pick up.
I think the idea is that it's so thick. So you have the melting, but then it's taking the mud, which is a thick substance that's catching things along the way. So you have
it's the ash. It causes it. So essentially what ends up happening as it flushed out and down and you know, toward the bottom of the mountain,
yeah,
and it finally kind of like petered out, that stuff all then dried up to the consistency of concrete because you're talking, you know, water ash. And ash,
okay,
you
know?
So it became like a concrete type of a substance, but as it was all flowing down, it was like wet concrete coming down,
mm-hmm. yeah,
along with boulders and you know,
just
stones
thick.
And
yeah.
Everything else I could pick up, all the wood and everything.
I think kind of like the molasses of like, what can it grab? What can it catch? Because of the consistency. It's so thick
and there
that
were
it has
people
a lot
that
more.
Were caught up in that. In
oh,
fact,
I'm
there
sure.
were people well down the river that had no idea the mountain even erupted.
Yeah.
And they got caught up in it. Him and his girlfriend got caught up in it. And they almost died. And they were able to somehow hang on. But they were literally like, they were hanging on to big, huge logs that had washed down the river with them, with all this other debris. And damn, they were literally almost getting crushed several times between, you know, everything that was with them in the water. But they were literally, they were just fishing. And all of a sudden they started hearing this noise and they're like, what is that noise? And then all of a sudden they look, and before they even had a chance to take two steps, they were washed up in it.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. Here they gone.
Yep. Bye. All right. So we'll see if I can do that. So God damn. So some of this mud flow known as a lahar.
Mm-hmm.
Which the page covered. Toodle, I think is what we agreed on.
Which, yeah, Toodle, I was gonna say.
Yeah.
Toodaloo.
So Toodle Valley up to almost 600, or oh God, sorry. Toodle Valley up to 165 feet. So yes, it like depth took over.
Wow.
That, pretty much took over that area, I feel like. It just like filled up that area. So the ash traveled and settled over seven states, reaching up to 2,200 square miles. 2,200 square miles. A lot of fucking square miles. That's a lot of square miles. For 7 hours, Mount St. Helens continues to spew out volcanic matter. I couldn't think of anything else to write there than a volcanic matter, and it seemed to work enough.
That works. That works.
The eruption couldn't be heard within 6 to 60 mile radius of the mountain. The sound waves went straight to the stratosphere. Stratosphere is the second layer of the Earth's atmosphere from the surface. The one that we're in now that we know of is the troposphere. Where nearly all weather conditions take place.
Yep.
What's even more interesting is the sound actually bounced, and people were 400 miles away could hear the eruption, and the bouncing continued, so they heard it over six times in some areas.
Shit.
One story is about a helicopter that was coming from the east side of the mountain, didn't even hear the explosion, but almost ran into it. The pilot was able to quickly get out of the way of the cloud of doom.
Whoa.
And if those guys in that helicopter would have been over the top of that mountain, okay, or over even the north side of the mountain,
yeah,
they would have either died or they would be deaf today.
Because
they would have got hit. They would have got hit by the, literally by the blast. Even if it wasn't the blast itself, they would have got hit by the, just literally the sound waves coming out.
Yeah.
Between the ash, the sound, the gas, just everything, something would, because it's like two.
Would it took them out.
You got a horizontal one and a vertical one.
Amazing.
If you were within 8 miles of the blast, you were gone. Unfortunately, this eruption took 57 people's lives. There are some, just like some people are like 50. I think it's like 52 to 64 or something, depending what you read, because there's like, oh, some people were missing, but not.
Yeah.
So most people to say 57.
Yeah, and that would have been 8 miles within the blast.
The lateral.
Radius.
The lateral blast.
Yeah.
The people who were on the south side of the mountain, they could have literally been like right up on the edge of the mountain and would have been fine.
So that's a really good distinction to bring up because the lateral. So it was like off the side of the mountain. That bulge that was coming out of the crater, that's where most of the shit went out, and that's why this eruption was so fucking gnarly. It's the
What ended up happening was that earthquake caused that bulge to collapse, and when it collapsed, it caused that landslide.
Yeah.
So now you have this landslide coming down, which is not what caused, you know, that's not what would have triggered an eruption had it been anywhere else besides on that volcano.
Yeah.
But the problem was where that bulge was, there was a magma pocket underneath that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when that
volcano.
It opened, it exposed that big, huge pocket of magma underneath there and just
took it over.
Yep.
So one of the 57 lives, one is known well in the community, Harry Truman. So he lived near the volcano and refused to leave. Though there are many warnings, he thought he'd be able to outrun the eruption if it happened. much around the mountains was closed off to the public unless you had a pass. Due to the possibility of eruption, they created fines and jail time if you did pass. And it was like $500 fine or up to 6 months in jail if you passed. It was like a couple times before the eruption, it kind of was quiet. And so people ran in and got their shit from their cabins just in case if it happened. Yeah, and then they were going to allow people to do it one more time. But that would have been after the eruption. So it's like when they're guessing.
Not only that, but all the scientists, besides for a few.
Yeah.
One of them is David Johnson, they feel, was completely convinced it was going to be a vertical eruption and not a lateral.
Yeah.
In fact, there was only ever one other recorded lateral eruption that we even knew of.
Yeah.
So they had nothing to go by.
Yeah.
You know, as far as
but that bulge should have been a good indicator. Because and I think David was the one that was like, well, if you look at this.
Yeah.
Well, you saw that the bulge was growing again, right?
Oh, so I come to that.
Okay.
I come to that. Yeah, don't worry.
The problem too is, and the reason why so many people died is because the way that they had the evacuation zones, because they were convinced it was going to be lateral. A straight up eruption.
Oh, I said lateral, but vertical. Yeah.
Yeah. So the way that they had the evacuation set was like a bullseye. Like if you look at a bullseye, you know, kind of wider.
Yeah.
So when it erupted the way that it did out it the one more, side, it went way beyond where they thought it was going to go.
Yeah.
That way. You know, so there were a lot of other people exposed to it that would have not normally been or should have been exposed to it had it been just a straight up eruption.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's one of the reads I've done too, is that if it was vertical, it would have been not as catastrophic as how it was because it was lateral. It actually destroyed a lot more because it covered a lot more.
Right.
Because when it's
out one side,
so much goes pretty much straight up and then out. But this went out versus straight up that it just automatically all that shit that's going up in the air and has a time to
dissipate.
Yeah. Like have the time to do that. It didn't do that. I just went out.
Yeah. It's like a really bad uncontrolled sneeze.
I was going to say it's like a gnarly snot rocket.
Yep. Yep.
We are very mature over here at Particular Situation. We have very good metaphors.
Yes, we do.
I was trying to come up with something and you guys just knocked it out of the park.
Every time. We're every time. Like that. Just like the volcanoes it. I don't know what to tell you. So much around the mountain was closed off to the public unless you had a pass due to the possibility of eruption. Along him, Henry Truman that we're talking about, there were also Reed Blackburn, Robert Langsberg, and as you guessed by now, David Johnston. 200 that passed away. 200 homes were destroyed, as well as 47 bridges. Highways and railroads were also done for. The eruption caused hundreds of square miles to turn into a wasteland. There was over $1 billion in damages, which in nowadays is definitely over $300 billion. It was like 3.5 almost billion.
Yeah, these and are 80s dollars.
Yes, exactly. And Mount St. Helens lost about 1,300 feet of its summit to the eruption because it like broke off so much that it shrunk by 1,300 feet.
Well, just evaporated. I mean, it just went up into the air, became part of all the crap that was coming out of the mountain.
It was part of the cycle of life. That was the worst version of that.
No, just no.
You loved it, Brett. So I had the VEI, as Brett brought to us before, the Volcanic Explosivity Index, which, by the way, as a side note, Pages does not wants to autocorrect explosivity. It does not believe it's an actual word, but it is.
I know.
A 5, which is pretty big. Yeah.
It is pretty big.
So it's been referred to as the most disastrous volcanic eruption on the mainland. And that's the continuous U.S. 48 states.
Yep.
There were more eruptions after, but not as tense as this one. As for the most current activity, It seems that Mount Helen is staying on the down low. So there's some activity from 2004 and a new dome started to form. However, it became quiet again by 2008.
Right.
You can actually follow the Cascades Volcanoes observations on the USGS.gov site, which is if you go to volcanoes.usgs.gov, they actually have a weekly update of the observations of all those Cascade volcanoes. So you can see what's going on. And all like the last like month of all, they're in green, which I'm guessing is fine and like normal. Yeah. They're on the down low. They're mad chilling. They're trying to either A, surprise us, or B, waiting for the right moment, as maybe they should.
Yeah, you could also go to the RSOE webpage. It's RSOEEDIS, I believe. If you Google that, you can bring up a webpage that does all disasters.
Fuck yeah!
Disasters, earthquakes, volcanoes, everything else in between.
Nice.
Vehicle accidents, everything.
Brett, that's it. And Michelle, I did the disaster. It fucking happened. I did Mount St. Helens. Yay! Finally.
Yeah, baby. Damn straight.
So I promise this will be a short one because, like I said, I don't have all the research on it.
Excellent. Done,
but I think I can pull a lot of it out the top of my head. So
cool.
I'm so excited.
So this is the death, I actually named this, death of Times Beach.
Okay.
So this was a town, which is now actually a ghost town, obviously, in St. Louis County, Missouri. And yes, it's in Missouri. And let's see, and... it's southwest of St. Louis and east of Eureka.
Okay.
I have no clue where that is in Missouri.
Me neither.
So. I've been in Missouri. Just because I'm looking at a map.
Oh, you cheater.
I'm cheating.
I've been in Missouri and Iowa, and I'm like, there's Kansas cities in the areas and Independence and Des Moines, and that's all I know.
Yeah.
I know that little section, and that's it.
So Times Beach was actually a town that became a town because of a now defunct newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually named after the newspaper. So it was the St. Louis Star Times newspaper.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So that was a newspaper. They did a, it was a like promotion where you could get a 20 by 100 foot lot for $67.50. You got 6 month subscription for the newspaper.
Ooh, bonus. Bonus.
This was in, it was founded in 1925, the town was. So
67, I'm guessing that was like, was that like, either it was like 670 or it was like 6,000. Either way, that's not a lot of money.
Still, yeah. Still.
It was under 10,000 bucks for a plot of land. Yeah. Holy shit. Okay.
So basically, it in the beginning, it was a beach town and eventually became like a lower middle class town.
Okay.
Because
they had cheap land. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that in, you know, the Depression hit and then you had fuel shortages and all this other shit, which caused all kinds of problems in the area. So that was a lot of the reason why the town really didn't like take off or become big or stick together or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
It became contaminated by dioxin.
Oh boy. We know that.
Yeah. And dioxin is one of the most dangerous chemicals on the planet.
Yep. Sure is.
Now it can be found in nature and isn't found in nature. In fact, one of the things it's found in is volcanic eruptions.
Mm-hmm. Dun, dun, dun.
So it does occur naturally, but the problem with dioxin is it's almost like I would almost attribute it to something like radiation and the fact that it has a half-life.
Yeah.
So it stays in your system for a very long time. It's something that you just get contaminated with and then you piss it out and it's gone, you know. It's something that's,
with you.
Yeah, it sticks with you for a long time. for
Didn't we do some research on this and we found that, like, I think you can pass down from generation to generation results or things that happen from there.
You can pass it from a mother to child.
Yeah.
And it also affects
side effects.
Yeah, there's a lot of effects in what passes down. Okay. So yeah, it's
it sounds super familiar.
I think I sent you something, didn't I?
Okay, that Love Canal.
Yeah,
it was Love Canal.
Love Canal was one, but I think I sent you another research on something I'm going to mention.
Oh, I haven't done that one yet. Yes, you sent, you sent Joplin, Love Canal, and then another one that we haven't gone into yet.
Okay.
Yep. And we're that other one is mentioned very briefly in here, because that other one is the only large scale release on a human factor that has ever happened.
Oh, fuck.
So they were able to find out that it does. Like, one of the weird things is, get this, it affects female to male ratios of children who are born.
Oh, so it fucks with the what?
Genetics.
Human genome.
So does it favor?
It actually favors females.
Interesting.
Put dioxin and everything. Fuck it. Fuck it. We need more women.
Power, girl power. We're going to dominate.
You might not like this, though. Dioxin in small quantities is found, and now you got to remember, dioxin builds in the body.
Yeah.
So not only does it build in the body, so if you're continuously exposed to it, it doesn't just drop off. It continues to build.
Yeah.
So it's found in diapers and tampons.
Whoops!
And I'm like, when I read that, I was like, what the fuck?
That fucking toxic syndrome, I'm telling you. Toxic septic syndrome.
That's just no joke either.
Yeah.
That stuff is nasty. So the fact that, you know, it's just not one of those things like mercury kind of has a half-life too, but mercury has a quicker fall off even than dioxin. Mm-hmm. There's not been a hugely large scale, besides for that one event that you guys will probably cover in the future, that happened in, I believe that was Italy. That particular event was the biggest scale where a large quantity of dioxin was sent into the atmosphere. And like I said, it screws with the genome. It screws with, like, before that happened, women in the area was almost 50-50 ratio between male and females that were born. Mm-hmm. Afterward, it favored the females considerably more than the males.
Exponentially.
Like 75-25.
Interesting.
75% to 25%. Yeah. So it was a huge swing, you know, with that contamination. Plus it also caused children that were in the area that were exposed to it to have this stuff called chloroacne, which causes it looks like acne to break out on their face and their skin. And it scars them. So that's awful. One of the other things that it causes. It's just nasty. The dioxin is like no joke. But what happened with this town was, it was a small town. Like I said, most of their roads were dirt roads. Mm-hmm. And there was a gentleman, and I can't remember his name, and I know it's in my research somewhere, but now I'm just going to go off of memory here. I got a lot of stuff on there, but I'm just going to go off of memory.
You're going to have to give your resources eventually.
The resources are my brain. I only have two resources, and that is Wikipedia and the EPA. That's it.
Perfect.
Other than that, it's all me. there was this guy, and like I said, I can't remember his name. If I looked it up, I'm sure I can find it really easily. But he owned a company. He would tar the roads. Like, he would, you know, like, spread the dirt. I don't know if you've ever lived on a dirt road before, but they spray like this black stuff on dirt roads. Yeah. And it keeps the dirt from flying around,
yep.
essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So his job was to spread this through this town. And he also, sadly enough, went to horse tracks and did the same thing. The first sign of problems in the area was horses were starting to die.
Oh, no.
And they couldn't figure out why. And they started doing all this research trying to figure out why these horses were dying. And they started testing the soil, and that's where they started finding extremely high levels of dioxin in the soil. So then they started testing the soil in other areas where he was spreading this chemical that he was getting, and started finding it on all of the dirt roads in this town.
Oh, fuck.
Now, the problem is, you spread something on a dirt road, what's going to happen? It's not going to stay on that dirt road.
No, it's
going
spread.
To get into the grass and the soil and the water and everything else. And that's what was happening. And they found extremely high levels of dioxin all over this town. And they ended up first trying to scrape the roads and get the dioxin out of the area. And they tried to decontaminate the area, but they realized it was just, there was nothing they could do. It was just way too much in too much of the area. Now, this guy claimed that he didn't know what was in the chemical that he was spreading. All he knew was he went to this chemical factory, picked it up from them, and spread it on the roads.
Mm-hmm.
That was as much as he knew. Well, of course, everybody went after him. You know, all the lawsuits went after him and everything, you know. But he's like, I didn't know what was in this. Well, he kind of did know what was in it.
So he wasn't as ignorant as he pretended.
Right. You know, and it wasn't straight up like, you know, just dioxin. It was other chemicals, too, that was in with this dioxin. But dioxin was a huge, you know, contaminant component of what was in with all this other stuff. So, yeah, they ended up, you know, trying to go after this guy, convict him, all this other stuff. I think they ended up, if I'm not mistaken, he did not get convicted of anything, but his company was ruined. He was ruined, you know.
Yeah, he still got sued.
He definitely got sued. And the factories that were giving him the stuff pretty much got off scot-free.
Of course. EPA, gotta love them.
Surprise.
Are we surprised? Well, no.
And, you know, during this time, the EPA was still fairly new. This was shortly after.
Yeah, they didn't have all the laws that they do now.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So this was shortly after Love Canal, although this town, Times Beach, did become a Superfund site. I think in the early 2000s, it was finally taken off of their Superfund in the early 2000s. I thought I read somewhere 2006, if I'm not mistaken. And what ended up happening to Times Beach was the government bought everybody out in the town, moved them all out. They took all the buildings and all of the soil that they could and basically just rammed it into a big pile, smushed it down, and put another big, huge layer of clay and a mound of dirt over top of it.
Why do they think this is working?
This fucking happens every you don't
every time.
It is literally
just
our version.
Sweep it under the rug.
Yes, our version of sweep it under the rug. Yep. Sweep it under to the ground every fucking time.
Or burn it. You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
exactly.
Yeah.
And they put in monitoring stations, and now that whole area is now a park because it was right along. The other thing too is this town was right along Route 66.
Yeah.
So as you're going through Route 66, you can literally stop at the
Times Beach Ghost Town.
Times Beach Ghost Town, which is actually now a state park.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So, yeah, I told you I'd keep it short. That's mainly because I really didn't have, like, all my research done and, you know. but it was all right.
Still, I think it's great.
Yeah, it was. It was also this whole story was featured in a couple of. It was featured in. The Story of Times Beach was featured on History Channel's Modern Marvels.
Ooh, nice.
It was an episode of Engineering Disasters 20.
Ooh, I need to watch that whole series.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I love me some Engineering Disasters.
Oh, Engineering Disasters. That's a great show. And then it was also mentioned in a 1987 film made in USA, directed by Ken Friedman, and starring Adrian Casadar, I guess that's how you pronounce it, Chris Penn, and Laurie Singer, and they referred to the Times Beach in that movie.
Interesting.
Ah. Very lovely. Well, not really lovely in the sense of what fucking happened, but...
right. Yeah, so it was when... I remember the first time that I heard about it was, I believe, on that Engineering Disaster show. And I was like, what the hell? What? I was like, this is some screwed up shit, man. And, you know, knowing about Love Canal and, you know, doing a whole bunch of research on that and all of that. And then hitting, you know, and hitting that. I was just like, fuck was wrong with people back then, you know?
They don't give a fuck.
They, sure. I mean, they okay, hold up. Do they still give a fuck? We have Flint.
I was about to like, say.
Yeah, I want to do a
also,
whole thing
still
on
don't
Flint,
give a fuck.
To justice. Yeah, like they don't give a fuck, especially if it's in an area where it's like you said, like lower middle class. They don't give a fuck.
No. Yeah. Like, don't worry, the town will just peter out.
Yeah. NPD. Who gives a fuck about them?
Yep.
I mean, like, shit, the government used to do some crazy, crazy stuff. I mean, they would inject homeless black people with radiation just so they could see what would happen to people.
Oh,
with
I
radiation.
Believe it.
Disgusting.
I was listening to This Podcast Will Kill You, which is like one of my favorite podcasts. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about how they were doing studies on different other kind of coronaviruses that there were before than what's going on now. And it's like, oh yeah, no, they would do like in people, like living people in 2000s. And it's like, oh yeah, that's a real thing.
That's awful.
And it wasn't something that just happened during the Holocaust. Like, it happened after that. Yeah.
Awful.
Very unethical kinds of studies and stuff. People are, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I'm turning into a pumpkin, so.
You want right, some pie?
Let's I do am her. Sleepy. Yes. Girl.
All right. What's this?
The ending. So when we go, oh my God, holy shit. That was amazing.
Holy crap.
Holy moly.
What an
guacamole.
Episode.
I'm real hungry. I want some Chipotle.
Me too.
Thank you.
Holy Spaceballs.
yeah. We want to thank everyone for coming in and listening to us again. This is definitely a longer episode. sorry. But
sorry.
I'm sure you're all excited to hear the bonus episode that will be coming out, you know, eventually sometime.
Yes.
If you want to come hang out with me and Brett, you can hang out with us on those social medias. You can slide into our DMs on Instagram at PDS Podcast. You can also tweet at us on that Twitter thing that some people understand at PDS Podcast. And if you want to, you can email us. Please email us. Can you please email us? We want to hear listener stories. So if you have a disaster story of some kind of thing that you experienced, we would love to hear it. So that is P, as in how Brina's so pretty. So that is pdangerous@gmail.com. If you want to hang out with Michelle and her other co-host, Michelle, how about you tell them where they can find you?
Okie dokie. You could email us at thecornfieldmeat@gmail.com. We are also on Twitter at Cornfield Meat and Facebook and Instagram at The Cornfield Meat. And I think that's it.
And you said you...
And don't forget to listen to her.
Yes. I would say you release episodes every Monday, correct?
Every Monday. Yep. Every Monday at 4 p.m. is our target. Sometimes not always, mate, but most of the time it is.
And we all aim high, girl. All of us.
If you check out the description, you're going to see all the information for them too. For some reason, if you could not follow how fast Brina talks, for example, you can also find those in the description, because I know I have the tongue of, I don't know, something that goes really fast. So if you cannot follow what I'm saying, it's all up in that description. I'm getting real YouTube-y right now, so I hope you really enjoy that, as if I'm some kind of influencer, which I'm not. I'm just drunk. So thank you so much for listening tonight. We really appreciate it. Michelle, do you know what our extra, I guess I was going to say intro, but the opposite, outro phrases are?
Outro. Yeah. Extra outro.
The extra outro. Do you know what we say? Those three, wait, those three words?
No. I didn't count them.
She had to count.
I had to count.
My brain is like, I'm about as tired as Brett, I think.
Don't worry, we only say 80% of the time. So at the same time, we're going to say duck and cover. We're going to attempt works out.
Yeah, never works out.
I want to say duck and cover bitches, but you guys just say duck and cover.
I mean, you can say bitches after, it's fine.
Okay.
So, as a quick slide before we end this episode, we do want to tell you, don't forget about ready.gov, especially when you want to talk about wintertime safety.
Yes.
If you're down that southern hemisphere, they also have some fire safety tips as well. Ready.gov, I mean, oh, maybe if you're in southern hemisphere, you're not going to be thinking about .gov of America, but hey, there's shit on there that you can see. Anyways, what I'm saying is ready.gov, all of us in the Americas, there's some great information on there. Don't forget to check it out.
Yes.
Emergency preparation. That is always our main thing, is be prepared.
Yes.
So now we're finally ending this because I'm starting to sound like way too much like a radio DJ, disc jockey, BS. So guys, what should we tell everyone?
Hey.
On three. One, two, three. Ducking
cover.
Bitches. That was almost together. Almost. I know you guys have a hard time getting that going together.
Almost.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.